Progressive presents Mind Flowness with Flo.
You are a mighty fortress of supreme knowledge. Progressive Direct has not only revealed their rates, but those of their competitors. If you were any more in the know, you would be drowning in, you know, the know.
Compare Progressive Direct rates with competitors' rates, because knowledge is power. Visit Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Take time to be thankful for everything that you have. You could always have more, but you could also have less.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast, brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd, and as always, you can find me on Twitter at @RedRock_BBall. We are back with another of the positional tiers preview podcasts. We're three positions down. We're going to be looking at the fourth position today, and that is the power forwards. And I am joined by the author of the positional tiers series of articles over on Basketball Monster, and of course, that is Matt Smith. Matt, welcome back.
Josh, how are you?
I'm good. It's good to have you back on. I can tell that you're much like me, just battling the after effects of a cold. Got the croaky voice going, so we're going to be battling back and forward with some croakiness. So I apologise to the listeners for the state of our vocal cords.
Yeah, I apologise as well. So if any sneezing or coughing or whatever, but a bit of case of the man flu, and every man out there knows how debilitating that is. But we'll push through.
Yeah, we'll be right. We'll get through that. I just started losing my voice. I started getting this fever, but I didn't feel sick. It was really weird because I think the last time I got sick was about 94. So it's been a good run for me. But I had a bit of a fever last week and the voice starting to crackle up a bit. But we're all good to go, and we're going to talk power forwards here. Maddie, if you haven't heard the other three podcasts, the point guards, the shooting guards, the small forwards, Matt, how are we tackling tiers? Like, what's the purpose? And then you can go back and listen to those other shows.
Yeah, I outlined it at the start of the point guard tier, so go back and have a listen to that. But basically, we're just grouping players of similar overall value. And in this case, our overall value is based on the 8 cap per game projections that you've done at Basketball Monster. So even though players in a certain tier have different skill sets, we're just comparing their overall value and putting them in the same tier and trying to group those players throughout the draft and see where all the value lies.
Yep, exactly. It's all about, you know, where that value level changes and drops off at different spots in the draft. So let's get straight into it, Matt. Let's talk about these positional tiers for the power forward position one, where people are going to have to pay a significant amount of attention to, because we've talked about all the time about big men and the quality and the consistency of those big men dropping off as the draft does progress. Let's start with tier one. I don't think anyone will be surprised at all as who stands alone in tier one.
Yeah, it's Anthony Davis. So we've got DeMarcus Cousins. He'll be in now in my center positional tiers, but Anthony Davis on his own there at the top of the draft, clear top seven player. His numbers didn't change too much last season when DeMarcus Cousins came across, so I think owners can be pretty confident with drafting Anthony Davis again. Obviously, still a slight injury concern and those trips to the locker room throughout the game and throughout the seasons, but yeah, Anthony Davis is a top seven pick for sure.
People are worried a little bit about Cousins, but as you mentioned, that second half of the season, like, both of their numbers were pretty much fine. I think Davis might have dropped from the third-ranked player to the fourth-ranked player or fifth-ranked player, depending on what sort of time frame you're exactly looking at and, you know, what categories and all that sort of stuff. But it was so marginal, the change. The one thing that did change, though, with Davis was his block numbers decreased as he played more as the four rather than the five. So even though, you know, there were times before Cousins arrived that he was, you know, considered a power forward, they went small plenty of times and played him at center, and that enabled him to get those higher block numbers. But that did dip. So that's something that, and people have questioned me, oh yeah, he finished fourth last year, how come you've got him seventh this year? And there's numerous reasons. There's other players getting better, like we assume Karl Anthony Towns is going to improve and jump ahead of him. And it's that fact that maybe his blocks go from 2.2 down to 1.9 or to 2, just playing a little bit further away from the basket with Cousins there. So that's the main reason there, but he does sit clearly atop that first tier for power forward players. The second tier has got two players in it. Who are they?
They are Draymond Green and Kristaps Porzingis. I think you pretty much know what you're going to get with Draymond Green. Those counting stats are as good as you can get. Both of these guys likely to go in the second round. Draymond Green's points per game is obviously an issue, so you'll need to be wary of that and his lower efficiency, particularly in rotisserie leagues. And Porzingis, he has top 10 upside. He could be a fantasy beast and be a really popular pick in that second round with shot blocking big men with high free throw percentage. They're pretty scarce this year.
Hi, you've reached the High Fashion Hotline.
Hi, my family's going to a tailgate and I want our style to stand out from the crowd.
Just go to Old Navy.
Old Navy?
Yep, Old Navy's got all the latest fall styles. Plus, during Old Navy's colossal sale, you'll save up to 50% off store-wide.
Did you say up to 50% off?
I did, so don't sit on the sidelines. Old Navy has the perfect pants from $19, stylish dresses from $15, and comfy tees for the family from just $6 right now at Old Navy and OldNavy.com.
We're cheering for Old Navy.
High Fashion, Old Navy. Valid 10-2 to 10-10. Select styles only.
I want to talk about Draymond for a second because, again, this all goes back to everything that I always say about projections and that rank column, and people always say, why have you got this guy ranked in this spot? And if they're ranked here, that means you've got to take him in the order. That's not what any of this means. So, KD might be ranked as the fifth ranked player, but it doesn't mean I wouldn't take him at three. It doesn't mean I wouldn't take him at one in certain situations. If I was looking at rotisserie leagues, he'd be in that conversation. Someone was saying to me yesterday, how can you justify having Mike Conley nine spots ranked higher than Kemba Walker? Like, I didn't put him nine spots ahead. I looked at the numbers and that's how it all came out. But with Draymond, he comes out as the 19th best player. But Matt, I have a real issue with drafting Draymond in that second round because unless you're punting points, that's a big difference. Everyone else is 20 plus points pretty much, and he's at 11 points. It's really hard to come back from that unless you just get big points in the first round and then big points in round 3 or 4 and 5 perhaps. So it does make him quite difficult to come back from, and we all know that getting points outside the top 50 is not an easy thing to do. So what's your opinion on drafting Draymond, especially if you're not willing to punt the points category?
As you said, it's going to make it difficult. Someone like DeMar DeRozan becomes a really strong target. You might have to go a round earlier on him to get that boost in points and free throw percentage. Isaiah Thomas would probably also be another target, but we've done a couple of drafts already. We're just seeing him slide so much into the 70s and 80s. Andrew Wiggins is another guy late. You can probably take him to give you that boost in points and scoring, and Draymond's value in rebounds, assists, steals and blocks can sort of counterbalance Wiggins, who doesn't do much in those areas. So it can be done, but you just have to be wary and really target that points category. And like I said, maybe go a round earlier on those guys than you normally would.
If you look at our projected points per game guys, or how I've projected all their scoring for the season, like Draymond falls outside the top 120 guys. Like he's 124th in projected points per game. Like that is a significant dip or a significant drop off from that area. 11 points per game is not high. So that is a concern. It is something you do need to pay attention to with your remainder picks if you are looking to compete in that category. But one thing you did mention about his efficiency, I'm actually pretty okay with his efficiency, not because of how it was piss poor last season. That was one of those weird things where we talked about these Warriors players. They might lose some touches here, but they'll all get better efficiency. They'll be able to hit their shots at a higher rate because of the extra attention, and it clearly didn't happen for Draymond Green. So when we talk about these things, people will say it for Russ. He's playing with Paul George now. Maybe his efficiency will go up. It's not always going to be the case, but I also don't think that Draymond's going to stick as being a 40% shooter. It just makes no sense that he could just miss as many shots as he did last season. I expect a fairly significant bounce back in that area for Green this season, despite the way that things panned out for him last year.
And it's on low volume as well. So, mid 40% from the field on 8 or 9 attempts and say low 70s on 2 or 3 attempts from the free throw line isn't going to hurt you as much. So, that works in his advantage as well.
Tier 3, who's sitting in that tier?
Yeah, we've got Blake Griffin, Kevin Love, and Paul Millsap. So a little bit of everything here. We obviously know that Griffin's strengths align his points and rebounds and assists. Won't bring those blocks from a power forward and center position. He also has a habit of missing games, a total of 83 over the past 3 seasons. Thoughts on Kevin Love this season?
Wait, my shiny metal ass.
Didn't mean to put. That wasn't a commentary on what you were saying, Matt. That was just an accidental button push.
Oh, there you go. Your thoughts on Blake Griffin with no Chris Paul there in LAC this season?
Yeah, I think he's got top 20 upside. I think he can average 20 points. Yeah, I think he can average. I think he could average 7 assists per game. I'm not sure he gets there, but I think that he's got a huge opportunity to be a top 30 player, almost at the least. I think he might be projected outside the top 30, but those areas are so close that it doesn't really matter. I think he's got a massive opportunity. The risk is clearly the injury, and I wouldn't take him inside the second round for that reason alone. But I could totally see it again, especially when we're looking for the dearth of big men. Look, if we were saying that Griffin's playing 78 games, then he's a guy that I would take at the back end of the second round. And I have in that group with Porzingis and Turner, is those big men there who jump up 4 or 5 spots depending on how it all pans out with your draft. But that is that concern, that he just continually misses time. He's dealing with a toe problem at the moment, which looks like he's going to be fine for the start of the season. Not concerned there, but it's just that any other sort of bullshit can pop up with Griffin throughout the season. Now, a lot of people might have been questioning me with Kevin Love. Isaiah's going to be missing. Surely he should be much higher. How come you've only got him projected marginally above what he did last season? And last season was a weird season for Love. I talked about this with Kyle yesterday on the show. Is that he averaged 19 points for the season, but over the last half of the year, like he played 60 games, over his last 30 games, he averaged just 16 points, which is what he had done his two previous seasons in Cleveland. So he started off red hot, averaging over 20 points a game for the first 30 games of the year, and then dropped way off down to 16 points per game in that second half. Now, I think that while Isaiah is out, he clearly becomes that second option and might average 19, 20, 21 points per game. But the thing is, we just don't know when Thomas is going to come back. And if Thomas comes back in November, then does Love maybe not move to a third option, but maybe a 2.5 and him and Thomas splitting that? So he might be able to get 18 points per game in that time frame. It's just so much up in the air at the moment. So I think that putting him in this tier is the right spot. The upside is there if Thomas misses more time. And the downside probably really, it isn't really much downside to have him in this area, I don't think.
No, I don't think so. I think he'll be sort of that top 35 player, regardless of what IT does, and potentially a top 25 player while IT is out. I've seen some people sort of say, could Kevin Love get back to his Minnesota Timberwolves days? I don't think that's realistic at this point.
No.
But taking all these guys in the third round, there's still a little bit of value to be had there.
The other guy you've got there is Paulie Millsap, and a lot of people, again, it's like, oh, he had a bad year because of Dwight Howard last year. Do you attribute all of his struggles last year to Dwight Howard? Because I definitely don't.
Not all of them, no. I think there's that natural decline as well with Millsap's going to be 33 by the end of the season. So I think it's a little bit naive to expect any drastic improvement in his value, just considering his age and the wear and tear on his body at this point in his career.
Let's move on to tier 4 now. We've got three big men in this group, and I think people might look at it and think one of those names perhaps shouldn't be in that group. But I'll go through it and let's talk about it.
Yep, so Serge Ibaka, LaMarcus Aldridge, and Aaron Gordon. So Ibaka's going to be a pretty popular mid-round pick for those needing blocks without hurting their free throw percentage. A couple more rebounds would be nice as well, and maybe that happens if he plays a little bit more center this season. Aldridge had a terrible season last year in San Antonio, one of his worst since his rookie season. I guess there's a small chance that he can bounce back, but I think his days of top 30 value are done. And I'm assuming you're talking about Aaron Gordon.
Yep.
In this tier. And if he's used properly, then he could smash this ADP and cement himself as a top 50 player.
The thing is, we look at these tiers, and that's where I think they're all in a similar group, but you can probably get Gordon 20 spots later, depending on how smart your league is. It might be 40 spots later, depending on your league. You might be able to get him at pick 100, and he returns top 50 value. So you don't necessarily draft them in the same spot. Aldridge, he did struggle last year. He still averaged 17-7 with 1.2 blocks with pretty decent percentages. So it wasn't a horrendous season. He was still a top 65 player. So there is still some value there, but it was obviously horrible if you picked him at pick 30, and no one's going to be doing that now. But I've seen him drop down to pick 80, pick 85 in certain situations, and that's, I think that's really, really good value to get LaMarcus Aldridge there. And again, you've always got to look at psychology of things. People dislike Aldridge at the moment. They think he sucks. They think he's terrible. They think that he was a no-show in the playoffs, and all that sort of stuff goes against him in public perception. But I think you can still get that value, and it might cause him to slip 20 spots, and then you can get that value and get a nice high-efficiency big who's going to score and get some boards and block a few shots for you at a spot where getting a player like that is not easy to do. Tier 5,
we've got Marquise Morris and James Johnson. So Marquise Chris, after the All-Star break last season, averaged nearly 13 points, 6 rebounds, a steal, 1.4 blocks and 1.23. So could really flirt with that triple one again this season if he can stay out of foul trouble and behave himself on the court, stop getting in fights with those Sacramento Kings players, then he's primed for a massive season. And he's got some similarities between Chris and Marquise Morris as well, just in terms of the way they play. And yeah, like to have a bit of a yap on the court.
Shin rebounders.
And their attitude, exactly. So we've just heard, probably in the last 24 hours, that Morris will miss the start of training camp to undergo surgery for a sports hernia. And he's also on trial for charges dating back to 2015. So prospective owners need to take note there. Out of the two, I'm taking Chris and his upside. Do you have a preference?
I would take Chris out of that group of guys, out of Chris, Morris and Johnson. I would take Chris there. The triple 1.5 percentage is real, but you've got to look at your team, because Marquise Chris's free throw percentage is a problem. His risk level is a little higher, given the fact that we don't know if he can stay on the court for more than 27 minutes a night without having some sort of dickhead play of creating multiple fouls in one possession. Stupid shit happens with this guy all the time. So that's the concern, but the upside there is higher. But if your team can't deal with the free throw percentage, then maybe you don't want to go that way. Maybe you do want to take Morris. Maybe you do want to take Jimmy Johnson there in that spot as well. As for Jim, Where are you at with him? Obviously, we've got Kelly Olynyk, we've got Justice Winslow who are entering the mix this season. Luke Babbitt is gone and his 18-minute bullshit starts that he was getting last season. But Johnson is going to struggle, I think, to maintain the exact same level of production he had at the end of the season, but they're also not going to limit him down to 23 minutes a night.
Yeah, I don't think it matters whether he starts or comes off the bench. He should be into that high 20 minutes per game range, still flirt with a triple one. And maybe an underrated point of his game last season was his passing. There was, you know, multiple games where he was sort of 4, 5, 6 assists per game. So we've got him projected at 3.6, which is fair.
So, yeah. That's me. I need to watch where my hands are going. I'm moving my soundboard out of the way.
Put them above your desk, mate.
Yep. They're there.
I don't know what I was saying, but James Johnson, yeah, I really like that pick, sort of in that 80 to 100 range of drafts.
Tier 6. We've got some real interesting players here, I think.
Yeah, we do. We've got Thaddeus Young, Ben Simmons, and we do have Nikola Mirotic here for the time being. We obviously still don't know where he will be playing this season. Could be in the States, could be in Europe, could be in New Zealand for all we know. I just find it hard to see how he has any sort of big role this season, no matter where he lands in the NBA. We've seen him in Chicago the last couple of years, hasn't been used very well, so I can't see them not signing him for the last 3 or 4 months over the off-season, and then all of a sudden, hey, Nikola, you know, come back and we'll give you 30 minutes a night. What's your sort of read on that whole situation, being a Bulls fan?
He's not going to get 30 minutes a night. He should. Because Bobby Portis is bad and Larry Markkanen's a rookie. He should get 30 minutes a night, but there's no way that they will do that. There's no way that they'll play that. But in order for him to be drafted or to be a top 100 player, he doesn't need 30 minutes a night. He needs 25 or 26, and he can do that. He can score. This team needs somebody who can score. He can do that. He can provide defense, for as much as people refuse to accept that white, hairy Europeans can provide any level of defense, he actually is an okay defender. He's not a bad defender. He's not a great defender, but he's an okay defender. And he can get steals and blocks and rebounds and hit threes. And he's really interesting. I probably would take those other guys in this tier ahead of him just because of the uncertainty we have. But if he's there in Chicago and Hoiberg wants to be competitive, he's their best option by a significant margin. The problem is Hoiberg has just screwed him around so much over these past two seasons. I'm just not sure what he is going to do, because I'm pretty convinced that Hoiberg has no idea what he's going to do most of the time. So that is the concern there. But if he's back and they say, well, we're going to start him and we're going to run him minutes, then I can guarantee you the stats are going to come. There's no doubt about that. He's going to put up numbers. It's all about what opportunity they give him.
No, that's fair enough. Thoughts on Ben Simmons as well in Philly, and I don't know if you've got his ADP handy, but
I do. He's where is it? His ADP is 53 on Yahoo and 54 on ESPN, which is too high. It's way too high. Now, he's coming in with no restrictions, as I've been saying for a while. He won't have restrictions. He won't be sitting back-to-backs. He won't have minutes limits. He is going to have the ball in his hands. He's going to pretty much run the offense in half-court situations, is what Brett Brown was saying. So he's going to have those assist opportunities. He's not going to score huge amounts. He's not going to hit threes, but he's not as bad a shooter as what people make out. He's going to rebound the ball. He's going to get assists. He's going to get some steals, and he's going to be a useful player. But like a lot of hyped rookies, he's going to get overdrafted. He's going to get drafted probably in that tier five range or ahead of those Markieff Morris, Marquise Chris sort of guys, and that's not necessarily where I want to go. But when you got assists like that that are out there where he could average 6.5, and he probably won't, but he could, then he is an option there for sure. So it's going to be interesting to see how he goes. But just remember, there is no restriction on him. There are no minutes restrictions. There are no back-to-back issues. That's just something that's been spouted out by everybody who wants to just paint everything in Philly with the same brush. Oh, of course, he's not going to play games. It's Philly. They're just going to constantly lose and do this on purpose. Like, it's not going to happen. He's not going to be restricted. It's not a chronic problem. This is not an ongoing thing. It was one twist of the ankle that caused the bone to break. And they handled it poorly from a media perspective last season, but he's fine. He's ready to go. He's out there playing full tilt. He's ready. There's no concern. Thad Young's an interesting one. I think I like him a little bit better for roto leagues, even though the poor free throw percentage, and that's because I feel that the second half of the season, that his role and minutes and touches and all that sort of stuff will be reduced, either by his own team or the fact that he gets traded to a stronger contender who sees him in a smaller role, which is makes it shit for head-to-head leagues. But in Roto, it doesn't matter if you play the good games at the start of the year or at the end of the year. So you might be able to get top 50 value out of Thad for the first 3 months of the year, and then he falls to outside the top 100, and that's fine. You get those top 50 numbers, and then you can piss him off or move him to your bench or do whatever with him. But in head-to-head, it's a real problem, and I drop him down a little bit in a head-to-head situation. That's the nuance that going straight off a rankings list doesn't allow you to get, and it's why you're listening to these and reading our articles and having a bit of critical thought as well. It's not about just ticking off a list of where players go, and same with the tiers. It's not about just how all this fits. It's about It's not about just reading off a list and grabbing guys in a specific order. Tier 7, as we go through a list in a specific order. Who have you got there?
Exactly. We have Julius Randle, Derek Favors, and Dirk Nowitzki. Now, I'll give your Locked On Fantasy Basketball listeners a bit of an exclusive here. I'm all aboard the Julius Randle breakout train this season. I think he's got a number of things in his favor. I think playing next to Brook Lopez will really help him, with Lopez's ability to spread the floor and Randle's ability to grab some extra rebounds there playing together. I think playing with a pass-first point guard and Lonzo Ball will help both Julius Randle and Brandon Ingram this season. We know Randle's in the best shape of his career. We've seen some photos and he's absolutely ripped. And he's also coming into his fourth season, so potential for that fourth-year breakout. I can see him averaging a double-double, as much as 15 and 10. I think he can get to sort of 3 to 4 assists per game. And I think he'll start hitting threes as well. I don't think it'll be 120 threes, but even if he can get to, say, 50 or 60 threes throughout the season, I think that'll be a really good outcome. And the defining factor of his value will be his steals and blocks. How high can he go in those two categories? So, yeah, I've drafted Randle in two leagues already at 91 and 97. I love him anywhere around that 100 range.
Yeah, I love him at that spot too. The problem is his ADP is 74 on Yahoo and on ESPN. I believe it's the same on both. Yeah, 74, which makes it a little bit high. I worry that maybe some of his assist numbers, which were a real driving force of his second half value last season, might disappear a bit with Lonzo Ball in the picture getting more of those assists. I worry that he'll have less time at center with both Brook Lopez and Andrew Bogut joining the team now also, and a lot of his value came from playing at center, and it enabled him to bring up his field goal percentage from 43 to 49 from his first season to his second season. And I worry that playing him further from the basket will lead to more erratic, wild 3-on-1 bullshit shots that he tends to take, which makes me not like him as a player. I'm definitely down, more down on him than plenty of other guys. But at that sort of spot, I'm totally on board with it. Taking him at 74, which would be, say, ahead of a guy like Marquise Chris, I would much rather have Chris in that situation. I think his game, and I don't think Chris is a good player, and I've said this plenty of times and get into arguments with it, but his fantasy ability and the ability to get those steals and blocks, which Randall, I just don't think he's ever going to be able to do. I think that's really key to providing that extra 20, 30 spots of value that a guy like Chris can get there ahead of Randall. Now, what about Favors? He struggled last season. We know that. A lot of injury concerns. The other concern you have that, okay, so maybe he's not, or maybe he's fully back from the injury, and that's fine. But Quinn Snyder just refused to play him at power forward last season. Yeah. He was exclusively, especially at the end of the season, as a backup center. We assume that he's going back to the starting power forward position, but what are you feeling about Favors for this year?
I'm really struggling to get a read on this. Can they make Favors and Gobert work, or is he now a backup center, and where does his his value, but his not reputation, but his standing, where does that sort of sit in Utah? Is he a guy that they maybe look to trade to get another piece? We know he's had a lot of injuries. I'm probably staying clear of Favors this season. Once again, I'd much rather Randall at this point, and maybe even someone like Jermichael Green or John Collins with a little bit more upside in the next tier. So I don't know. It's a real iffy one. I'd like to see how he goes in preseason and maybe making a judgment in a couple of weeks' time.
He's getting drafted 41 spots after Julius Randle on ESPN and 36 spots after him on Yahoo. So while they're in that same tier, I've got no problem with taking Derek Favors with my 11th pick or my 12th pick. And if it doesn't work out, so be it. Then he goes. Then he just gets kicked off and he plays backup center and plays 20 minutes. But the thing is, I don't think they want him to play backup center because they signed Epe Udo to be the backup center. So I think, and yeah, with waiving Boris Diaw, they want to push him. They don't have these power forwards. They traded away Trey Lyles, who was going to be their power forward of the future. I think they are going to want him back into that power forward role. And I don't think he's getting 34 minutes a night. But I think at that spot there, I'm quite okay with drafting him because it is a bit of a no-risk situation. What about Dirk? I think we just know what we're going to get from Dirk, don't we?
Yeah, we do, some points and some threes and that sort of thing. He was ranked the 100th player last season. He won't play much more than 26 or 27 minutes per game this season, making him on the fringe of standard leg. So he's another one that I'll be letting others take with some name value there.
Tier 8. There's some real interesting names in this group here.
There are. We have Jermichael Green, Gorgui Dieng, John Collins and Marvin Williams. So obviously Green is another unsigned free agent. The Grizzlies basically don't have a power forward there at the moment, so be really surprised if a deal isn't done prior to the season starting. For that reason, he might be sliding in drafts currently, or if you've already drafted and, maybe take a flyer on him as a late round pick, some good points and rebounds and efficiency there. Gorgui Dieng, he's another one I really don't know what to make of. Obviously, there's this high efficiency and the steal and block per game are nice, but his points per game dropped off significantly last season, and now with Jimmy Butler there in Minnesota, I just don't see how he can sort of even get close to 10 points per game. What's your read on Dieng?
It's weird. I don't know what they're going to do. I find it really strange that Andrew Bogut was considering going to the Timberwolves because he said that there was a clear role there and clear minutes for him to slot in as the backup center. And I just think, what the hell is Tom Thibodeau doing? That Jimmy Butler trade was a fleecing, but I feel like every other move he's made has been questionable to bad in terms of his free agent decisions. And when you've got Dieng there to play backup center, you've got Taj as your power forward. Like, what are you going to do? Just play 24 minutes of Dieng and 24 of Gibson strictly as power forwards? It seemed nonsensical that you'd want to bring Bogut in to be that backup when that's exactly what Dieng can do in that role. And you've got Bielitsa, who's also there, Shabazz Muhammad, who can play some small ball four as well. It just didn't make a huge amount of sense that Bogut was in discussion there. So that worries me a little bit about Dieng. But taking him at this spot for his efficiency and his defensive numbers is really useful. And if they go back and play him 35 a night, then yeah, it's top 50 is on, top 60 is on, irrespective of the scoring, the rebounding, the steals, the blocks, and the efficiency is nice. You mentioned that with Jermichael as well. He provides that really good efficiency. The problem is much like Julius Randle, steals and blocks are just non-existent. I think he's a real low upside player. Green, people really loved him last season, and while he was solid, he wasn't good. He was fine. He rebounds the ball well. He hits some threes, but he provides no defensive numbers. He gets you no assists, and he's a low-volume, decent efficiency player, which is all fine, but the upside's not there. And saying that, his ADP is 140, so I've got no problem with grabbing him with a last two or last three pick and getting those rebounds up without hurting your efficiency numbers. That's totally fine, but I don't think that we should be looking at Jermichael at the age of, I think, 27 or 28 and expecting him to change his game completely and become a top 70 type of guy. I just don't see that as being something that's interesting. Johnny Collins is a real interesting guy to me.
Yep.
I don't really advocate for drafting him.
Yeah,
because the first 3 months of the season, I don't think we'll get much. I hope we do, but I don't think we'll get much. But I reckon we could have a top 60 guy for, you know, February through April, or maybe January through April, top 60. Maybe that's being pessimistic. He could come in and average 15 and 10 on high efficiency numbers in the last 2 to 3 months of the season. But the problem is you can't hold on to someone who's outside the top 200 in a daily changes league for 3 months, because you just won't be in the playoffs to reap the benefit of it in most cases. In a roto league with games limits, in a weekly changes league, sure, he's a nice lottery ticket to hold on to. But in daily changes, it's just not worth it.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And Ersan Ilyasova is in our next tier. He would be the guy to draft and maybe get 2 to 3 months of value out of, and then come January or February, dump him, and hopefully they turn it over to John Collins.
Let's talk about tier 9, where Ersan Ilyasova is, and go through this list of players here, and we'll talk about a few of those guys.
Yeah, so this is our last tier and wraps up the top 30 players. So Scal Labissiere, Kyle O'Quinn, Patrick Patterson, Ilyasova, Rashawn Holmes, Dario Saric, Ryan Anderson, and Jonathan Isaac. So, yeah, a bit of a strange bunch. All of these guys are projected out of our top 130, so shouldn't concern owners in standard leagues too much on draft days, but put them on your watch list and keep an eye on them through pre-season and the start of the season as well. Labissiere will probably be a popular late-round fly, given what we saw at the end of last season. Patterson, Ilyasova, and Anderson, we know, provide those out of position threes, and Rashawn Holmes in particular would be a great handcuff if you're in a deeper league and you've got Joel Embiid on your team as well.
Now, a lot of people are talking about this handcuff situation, which I know is very popular in fantasy football, and people are going super hard on it, and I cannot get behind taking Rashawn Holmes in round 7 with the hope that Embiid misses time, because A, we don't even know if he's going to be the backup center. B, if he is the backup center, he'll be splitting that time with Jahlil Okafor and Amir Johnson, and Dario Saric is going to play center also. So he's not going to be guaranteed 30 minutes a night, even if Embiid isn't ready to start the season, or if Embiid plays 30 games. He's not going to do that. So I think wasting a 7th-round pick or an 8th-round pick is asinine to me for a situation. It'd be like taking a punt on John Collins there and saying, oh, well, you know what, in February, maybe he's a top 60 player, but taking him with your 7th pick. Now, if you get him with your last pick, that's fine, but Philadelphia people think that Okafor might get that first opportunity, even though they are still trying to trade him. He might get that first opportunity at the backup center. Amir Johnson wasn't just brought in to finger his asshole. Like, he's going to be there to have some sort of role. I don't know what it's going to be, but he's going to have some role. And if Embiid is out, then maybe he moves into there. Saric will play center alongside Simmons. This will all happen. So Holmes' upside is pretty... I love Holmes, and I thought he was fantastic last season, but for him to get back to that level of the second half of last season, I think that's going to be really tough for him this season. I can't see it happening with all those other options around, unless catastrophic injuries strike and Simmons gone and Embiid is gone and Okafor is out, and then it's literally just left to him and he plays 27 a night, then by all means. But that's a lot of ifs to get to that stage.
And that's what happened last season. They were just...
Exactly.
The front court was absolutely decimated, and Rashawn Holmes came out of nowhere, and all of a sudden his last month or 2 months were through the roof and probably won a lot of people championships, and therefore, yeah, they want him on their team again this season.
I'm not into taking Kyle O'Quinn with a last pick. I think he'll probably be the backup in New York, but unless he gets 25 a night, then it's not going to work. He's can be a decent high upside, high producing guy, but the upside for him to get more minutes than that is limited. Pat Patterson, not for me. Ilyasova's fine, as we talked about, for an early pick. Saric, well, his ADP is 60, so getting him at this spot's pretty unlikely. I just can't see any way that he achieves that ADP position. And Ryan Anderson, I don't want anything to do with. But I want to talk to you about John Isaac. I spoke to Kyle about him yesterday, and Kyle was firmly in my camp of being big Jonathan Isaac fans. The problem I have for him this season is just going to be minutes. But you, what's your take on him for dynasty formats?
I still really like him for dynasty. Hard to see him fall out of the top five or six in a dynasty rookie draft. But yeah, for this season, just hard to see where that playing time comes. Obviously, Aaron Gordon, if they use him properly at power forward. And then at centre, you got Vucevic and Biombo and Maurice Spates there as well. So it's just hard to see, particularly early, how we get that playing time. Maybe as the season goes on, he can get into a 20 to mid-20 type of range, minutes per game, and scrounge together some sort of fantasy value. But I don't think he's gonna warrant any sort of teams to watch him who are in standard leagues. I just don't see the value there, like I said, particularly early on in the season.
There are no other power forwards on that Magic team, though, so he's going to be the primary backup. Maybe he gets some minutes at the three. Biombo's trash, so maybe he gets some minutes as the backup five. Biombo's one of those ones where last season I would just constantly bang on about, this guy is shit, this guy is shit, this guy is shit, and everyone seemed to think he was good, and I'm glad that he turned out being bad, because it made me look at least to have some level of common sense, because I was really harped on about this guy being bad. And he shouldn't be in the rotation, I don't believe. I'd rather have Spates out there. I'd rather have Isaac playing the five. He can play 10 minutes a night. You cannot play him more minutes than that. And that is one of the worst contracts. Joakim Noah's a bad contract. At least he was good at one point. Biombo's never been good. And getting paid that amount of money is ludicrous. I think that that does it, Matt, for our player tiers. We are got one more to go. We're going to be covering that next week, and that is the center tiers, which is one that people are going to want to have to pay attention to, because we talk about it all the time, and centers is a position that goes really, really quickly. In drafts, in fact, in the Roto mock we just did, I think Kyle took center was his first four picks, and then went guards after that. So, you know, getting those centers, taking them away from other people as well, and really solidifying those big man numbers. Matt, where can everyone find you and argue with you on Twitter about this power forward tiers?
Yeah, sure. You can find me on Twitter at @SmanSports. So, hit me up over there for any fantasy basketball questions.
Go and follow Matt there. Go wish his Adelaide Crows best of luck for their upcoming preliminary final this weekend. I'm sure Matt will be eagerly watching that and hoping that they get over the line. I hope they do as well, despite the pain that your team caused my team 20 years ago has been erased by last season. So I'm okay with it now, despite the 20-year heartache that I had to deal with. I'm okay with that now. So I do hope that you guys get over the line and play over here in the grand final for the next week. Now, if you guys win, are you going to come over to the grand final?
I'm coming to stay, so I hope you've got a spare bed.
I have a very uncomfortable couch, so you can stay on that.
That'll do.
Fantastic. All right, Matt. Follow Matt. Follow me. Twitter, redrock_bball. Subscribe to this podcast. iTunes, which is now Apple Podcasts. Got to get that out of my head. Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, and of course Spotify. And leave a review. 5 stars is the best way that you can help support the show. And another way you want to support the show, patreon.com/redrock_bball, and becoming Basketball Monster members. Your drafts will be coming up. There is no better way to dominate your draft and dominate your season than becoming a Basketball Monster member. And we're going to have our DFS memberships opening up at some point in October as well. So make sure, some people ask me, are you still doing DFS? Yes, we are. We don't release the DFS memberships at the same time as the seasonal stuff. That will come later on. So in October, we'll open that up, but we are definitely still having that. Matt, thank you for coming on once again.
Thanks again, Josh. Cheers.
We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Solomon Hill.